Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Hopefully you enjoyed Sunday's football and basketball action. Adam Pfeiffer here, Joe Metz with me. Joe, great stuff on the FTN Primetime live stream with Benny on Sunday, breaking down the slate. It was a pretty fun one. I'd like to think my articles did pretty well. Talked about Gobert, Jamal Murray, Durant. Didn't have enough Steph Curry, though, and he scored a career high. You know how good Steph Curry is, that he scored 62 points, and I was like, that's really his career high? Like, you would have thought Steph Curry would have had a 70-point game.
Yeah. I was absolutely shocked that was his career high. I'm in the same boat with you, and I'm really glad, because there's been so much discussion drumming up on social media, which I think is completely irrational, that, oh, Steph Curry needs Klay Thompson, Steph Curry's overrated and wasn't as good as we thought. Like, the guy was a unanimous MVP. Like, come on. He's had five somewhat down games with nobody to take pressure off of him. He is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he reminded us of that tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to shout out David Jones again. I mean,
this is going to become a regular thing, I feel like.
Is it just every Monday or something we'll just do this?
I would like to think that your articles, my prime time, may have contributed to it. But again, like, all of these plays were in his bank shot article. So if you haven't learned your lesson the first time, you know, strike two, that's, shame on you, man. Like, if you aren't reading his bank shot articles, I don't know what to tell you, because they've literally won him to at least $200,000 in the last 7 days.
Yeah, I mean, you're just missing out at this point. So congrats to him again. Another huge night for him. And yeah, we'll try to all have huge nights here on Monday night. 7-game main slate in the NBA. We saw Luka Doncic out on Sunday. He's questionable again for this game, for this slate. So we'll keep an eye on that superstar. James Harden's questionable, and a couple other smaller injuries to keep an eye on. Now let's get right to it, man. Cleveland at Orlando. This game doesn't have a total yet. I think the Cavs or the Magic are 4.5-point home favorites.
Yep.
Darius Garland's on the injury report with a strained right shoulder. He's questionable. So it's obviously very significant. Colin Sexton's been playing great this year, and really since the second half of last year. He's now scored 20 points, real points, in every game this season. He's taking, on average, you know, what, 108 quick math divided by 6. I mean, 18 shot attempts per game. Like, the usage is already there. The price is higher, but because they don't really have anybody else to handle the ball, still no Dellavedova. I know Exum is back, but, like, if Garland's out, is this a price tag where we're still okay going to Colin Sexton? He's been so good. His usage rate this season jumps to almost 3% with Garland off the floor. And, like, is Colin Sexton all of a sudden going to become a high assist player with Garland out? No, he'll probably just take more shots, if anything. But you would think he handles the ball more in general and could get more assist opportunities, especially with Darius Garland this season. I mean, he leads the team in average minutes of possession per game at 6.4. It's actually one of the highest marks in the league. So this guy has the ball in his hands a lot, and he might not play in this game.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat with you. Like, I would 100% be okay targeting Colin Sexton at this price. I think the big selling point here for me is, you know, Orlando's a completely different team with Markelle Fultz getting full run this year. Like, they are currently top 10 in the NBA in pace, which is not something we saw last year. So that caters well to someone like Colin Sexton, who scores so well in transition. He would have extra shots to go around with Garland out. Obviously, Kevin Porter still out. Isaac Okoro is, I believe, questionable, but if he's missed so many games, I can't imagine he comes back in full capacity. Dellavedova is still out. Like, there are still a lot of minutes, especially in the backcourt, to go around, where the Garland injury would just cement Colin Sexton into, you know, he's already playing 37, 38 minutes a game, even more, with more usage and the incremental peripheral here and there. Like, that's a pretty solid cash play to me.
I know it's Cleveland, but I don't think Colin Sexton's getting enough hype. Like, is Colin Sexton an elite player? No, of course not, but he's scores 20 every night, and he shoots relatively efficiently from the field. So, yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on Garland. Kevin Love, obviously, also going to be out. He's out for at least 3 weeks. So, I mean, Cleveland in their last game against Atlanta, they kind of just went away from Drummond. You know, Larry Nance was playing well. JaVale McGee was playing well. And the other players on Cleveland were all just contributing. So Cleveland stuck with that. Now, on most nights, are they going to go away from Andre Drummond? No, but he's 9,200 here. It's a pretty high price for him. I think this is the highest price he's been all year, if I'm not mistaken, or at least it's up there. He was 9,200 against Atlanta, so this is the exact same price. I don't know if I love that. Nance is 7,100. We know he's starting and has a really high floor because of his peripherals, but that's an expensive price tag. Like, Orlando, they're not as good defensively without Jonathan Isaac, but, like, they're still an above-average defensive team. Like, where else would we go from Cleveland? Like, with Dellavedova and Kevin Porter Jr. out, I mean, would Dante Exum get run? He played 35 minutes last game. Would he be a value play at 3,900? Because, you know, they're starting five, but with all the other injuries, they can't get that creative, right? They're probably going to end up starting, you know, Sexton. And if Okoro's out, like, that, they'll probably have to start Sexton, Exum, Chetty, Nance, and Drummond. Like, they can't play Kevin Porter if he's not there, or Isaac Okoro, and obviously, you know, Dellavedova and Garland could be out.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, looking at this team outside of Sexton, it's a little harder for me to feel confident in than I would have, you know, when the last time we did the podcast, you and I were really high on these cheaper Cavs. The minutes for Exum are there, and, you know, if Garland misses, that's just more merit for them to be there. He's just been such an inefficient permanent producer for his career, where it's hard to see a ton of upside. I think the floor is certainly there in cash games. You know, you obviously target cheap guys with minutes, that because the more you're on the court, the more likely you are to fall into production. So I understand that. If there's any other really cheap piece on this Cavs team, though, I'm kind of curious what they're – you might have a little more information on this than I do, but, like, with JaVale McGee, like, he's been getting somewhat significant run lately. He saw 25 minutes last game against Atlanta when you said they went away from Drummond. Obviously, he's going to probably stick in that 15 to 20 minute range. His price did rise to 4,500, but he has been a point per minute machine, like Hassan Whiteside level machine.
Yeah,
this season it's been. I mean, the guy. I think it was. I want to say New Year's Eve, where he, like, I think he started the game like 0 for 9 from the field, and everything he was missing were like offensive rebound tip-ins and like. It was like midway through the first quarter, he was like 0 for 7, 0 for 9 with like 9 boards. Like, if he's missing a shot,
he has a 45% rebounding rate with Love off the floor this season. 45%.
That's, like, ridiculous.
Drummond is at 51%. So, like, if there's a loose ball, there's – like, if there's a ball that's shot and missed, it's going to either Drummond, if he's on the floor, Nance, or JaVale McGee. Like, nobody else is even close to, like, a 15% rebounding rate. Exum's at 14%. So, like, if there were to be a guard that could get some rebounds, it would probably be him if Garland's out. But, yeah, it's just ridiculous. Like, let me ask you this. Would you be more inclined to pay $9,200 for Drummond or just take a shot on JaVale at $4,500?
I honestly would probably still pay $9,200 for Drummond.
So I just wanted to see if you were
worried about Drummond. What do you make of that? What do you make of that $4,500 price? It's not, you know, it's not necessarily like dirt cheap anymore.
It's essentially paying a little bit less for like DeAndre Jordan's potential. You know what I mean? Like, he could play 18 minutes. Okay. He could play 25 minutes. What about the other center from this game? Nikola Vucevic, 8,800, really favorable matchup. Drummond's actually been playing really strong defense so far this season. But I mean, we already have the team without Jonathan Isaac, obviously. Aaron Gordon's minutes have remained limited. Now, Evan Fournier is questionable with a back injury, so that could lead to even more usage for Nikola Vucevic. And that could obviously help Markel Fultz, who didn't really produce. I think he's a little bit overpriced at 6,500, considering his back.
Yeah,
he's had back-to-back underwhelming games. So that's a little bit worrisome for me. But could this be a spot where Cole Anthony gets some run? If Garland plays or not, Cleveland plays Garland and Sexton together for 35, so many minutes. Like, so you can play a Cole Anthony, Markel Fultz backcourt easily against Cleveland.
Yeah, I agree. And their style of play is so different, too, where they're not going to necessarily negatively correlate, and they also don't share the court a ton together. Cole Anthony, if you, I don't, for some reason on League Pass, I've watched more Orlando games than I think any team besides the Bucks and like Memphis, maybe, like just really random. But Cole Anthony literally shoots the ball every time he catches it. He will like drive into the lane and take these circus level shots with three bigs on him instead of passing out just because he wants to score so badly. Like that might not be the healthiest player to like when you're watching a basketball game, but that's something you want in DFS. Like you obviously want someone chasing production. So he carries a 22% usage rate. That's just in general this season. That's not like specifically the games with Fournier off the court.
It's actually the same mark too, by the way.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, with Fournier off, he's a 22% usage rate, over a fantasy point per minute, 26% rebounding rate, and 18% assist rate. So the question is, like, is it going to be more minutes for him or Michael Carter-Williams? Because Carter-Williams has played, like, 23, 24, 27, and 31 minutes. And he started on Saturday with Fournier out. So, like, 4,600, he's a guy that we know is a high peripherals player, can get rebounds, assists, steals, whatever he gives you, scoring is extra, but like 9, 6, 8, and 6 rebounds, no Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon's minutes are limited still, so it's like they don't have a ton of rebounders on this team right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a play that gets the job done. It's not a flashy play, you know, it's not a sexy play, but they're still cheap enough where I think he warrants consideration. At the end of the day, though, like if there's going to be a Magic player I target, you don't have to twist my arm to play Nikola Vucevic. Like, the guy's averaging over 1.4 DraftKings points per minute this year. And, like, I don't know when these sites are going to price him up appropriately. I think anytime he's under 9K, like, you have to consider him an elite play given his ceiling. He's 8,300 on FanDuel. Like, that's insulting to me. That's someone that I want to take advantage of whenever he's at this price range, and this matchup just caters to it more because they're going to need him on the court as much as possible. Not that they already don't, but
yeah. I think you can take a shot in tournaments with Terrence Ross. Just understand that, like
that's
even with Fournier out, crazy. He can still give you like, you know, 17 real points and 19 fantasy points. Carter Williams or Exum if Garland's out.
Carter Williams. Oh, God.
No, I agree with you. It's close, though. I just think Carter Williams is a higher overall ceiling for fantasy
points. I think he does, too, strictly because of his peripheral production. His price is just a little higher, obviously.
All right, let's move on. Philadelphia at home against Charlotte. These teams just played. The game was not close at all, and all the Sixers went off. I mean, Ben Simmons with his first triple-double of the season, and Embiid had a great game. Tobias Harris had another monster game, and Seth Curry had a great game. So, like, everybody got it done for Philadelphia, and they look really good right now, especially on the defensive end. I mean, the prices are interesting. I think Embiid at 9,900, once again, just always my favorite whenever he's under 10K, but especially when the other members of this team are priced at their ceiling. I mean, Simmons is 9,100. Tobias has been playing great, 7,600. Seth Curry coming off a nice game, he's up to 5,600. For me, it's once again Joel Embiid. You know, no Cody Zeller, Bismack Biyombo. Just they can't guard him. They can't guard centers anyway. They're not going to be able to guard arguably the best in the NBA. But like, what do we do? I still struggle with these other Sixers right now.
No, I'm the same way. Like, I think last game, you know, they all played well, but I think in terms of DFS, you have to take it with a grain of salt because like, Adam, think about it. How many times have we seen all three of the big three plus like an ancillary player, like in this situation, Seth Curry, have a ceiling game in the same game when everyone's healthy? You never see that in Philadelphia.
And right. I understand. Especially in a game where they won pretty handily too. Like,
correct. Like, they played enough minutes. Like, I was surprised that the starters were out there. Like, Joel Embiid played 37 minutes and they were dominating from start to finish. Ben Simmons in that game, he played 37. Tobias Harris was around that range as well. They are actually all at 37. So it's hard for me to bank on that again, especially because they've been priced up almost with the expectation that they're going to repeat that performance. But I mean, Seth Curry is still outside of Embiid, who's obviously my favorite 76er. I think Seth Curry is my number two. Like, 5,600 on DraftKings is really reasonable. He's seen 33 plus minutes in two of the last three games. He's attempted 10 plus shots in all three of his last games, and at least six of them in every game have come from three. So he's doing enough right now. He's scoring the ball well. He's producing some assists. Like, At 5,600, I think he's a pretty stable play, regardless of game script.
Yeah, Embiid should smash here. He's averaging 14 post-ups per game, easily the highest in the NBA. Charlotte allowing a 61% field goal percentage to the post, fifth worst rate in basketball. They just don't have a shot against him. He's my favorite. I would probably agree. Like, the Hornets the last 2 years have been the worst spot-up defense in the NBA, so that's great for Seth Curry.
Yep,
who yep. I'm a little disappointed isn't they're not running as much triple handoff as I would have hoped. But with Doc Rivers, they're having Embiid and Dwight Howard set a lot more screens in general than they did it with Brett Brown. So that definitely helps somebody like Seth Curry. Simmons, like, massive floor. If I have no problem playing him. I just struggle to get to him when he's priced with some of these other players that are available on the slate. Charlotte, interesting. So PJ Washington left. In the second half, he only played 8 minutes in the second half. He had a thumb injury. He's questionable. But, like, what do we do with LaMelo Ball? Because he's starting to turn it on a bit. The minutes are going up. And at what point do we say, all right, LaMelo, 5,600, we know he's a guy that could, speaking of triple-doubles, he could easily get one any day now. And the minutes are trending up.
Yep.
Do we want to be, and now this may not be the spot, obviously, but do we want to be in a situation where we're on LaMelo Ball before he has this huge breakout game? Or is this more of a wait and see, not the slate for me to do it? Because he's starting to come on
tough.
A bit.
It's a tough situation. Like, so the price discrepancy between FanDuel and DraftKings is interesting to me. He's almost 1,000 more on FanDuel, so that makes me like him on DraftKings more than FanDuel, obviously. But before the last game, like, head coach James Borrego said, there is going to be some shifting to the rotation. Not necessarily, you know, a new starter, but the minute distribution is going to change a bit. And we did see that. We saw LaMelo get a lot of work. He played 30 minutes, his first game at that benchmark. And he checked in the game really early for Devonte Graham. Now, Devonte Graham played really poorly. I think he started the game like 1-for-10 or 0-for-9, something like really bad. So that obviously might have catered to that. But LaMelo's doing everything he needs to do to earn more playing time. And he just exploited this matchup before. Like, it's. I'm not saying go out there and attack this defense because they are currently the best defensive unit statistically in the NBA. But I definitely think, like, he, for his price, you know, at 5,600, I have a hard time finding someone with more tournament upside. Like, he has slate-breaking, tournament-winning upside at that price based on what I think his ownership will be.
Right, I agree. If PJ Washington is out, does that make us like anyone more? Like, Gordon Hayward is just, I haven't been too excited. He's been pretty solid. I mean, 18, nearly 19 points and 5.5 rebounds and assists per game. Just, again, another one of those guys at 7,300 in a bad matchup. Like, there's mm-hmm. other players. Like, I'd probably just play Tobias on the other side.
Yeah, at his price, I agree. You know, if PJ misses, I don't know if it moves the needle enough for me to target anyone on Charlotte. He's splitting minutes at the five when Bismack's not playing the position. But in this matchup, whether it's, you know, Embiid at the five, Dwight Howard at the five, like, I don't see them, like, sliding Miles Bridges or someone like that down to the five. So I expect a little more Bismack. If there was any wing that would see an incremental boost, I think it would be Miles Bridges. But at 6,100, that's not someone I'm going to play.
No, I don't understand. I know he had the 48 point game where he had 16 rebounds,
but that's a ridiculous, he's not even playing. Like, he's averaging like 25 minutes a game too. Like, he's not
right. I
the price doesn't make sense to me.
No, I'm not playing anybody. Like, if I'm gonna play anybody from Charlotte, it's probably Melo, or I'll take a shot on Terry Rozier because he'll see a lot of Seth Curry, whereas the other guards might see more Ben Simmons. He's taking a ton of shots, but yeah, I'm not really on the rest of Charlotte. Let's move on. New York at Atlanta. Injury news. Kevin Huerter, ankle, questionable for Atlanta. Kevin Knox for the Knicks is probable. Gallinari's out. Obi Toppin obviously still out. And Rajon Rondo is doubtful. So, where should we start? I mean, Julius Randle, 9K on DraftKings. He's been obviously just remarkable this year. Pretty solid matchup here. You know, New York's a little bit healthier at this point. Like, their backcourt is getting healthier. Burks is also questionable forgot to add. But, like, they have Rivers. They have Quickley. They have Peyton. Dennis Smith Jr. could be back. He's doubtful, though, so probably not. It's not as appealing to go to these New York guys, but, like, it's not a bad matchup against Atlanta. We know they play fast. We know their defense isn't great. Talk about New York here.
So, I think, obviously, Julius Randle is going to garner the most attention because Thibodeau has been running every facet of his offense through this man. And we talk about it on every podcast. Like last year, Julius Randle averaged just under 69 touches per game. And he was, I believe, second on the Knicks behind Elfrid Payton. This year, he is literally averaging 23 more touches per game. He's at 91.7 right now. That is a massive boost. And it's, look at what it's doing to his production. Like, it's obviously doing exactly what they hoped it would. So just because of his, like, we've seen his 60-plus point upside, there's merit to paying $9K for him. I don't know if I would prioritize him over because once you're up by $9K, you're only a few hundred off of Joel Embiid. And in a vacuum, I'm going Embiid over Randall on this slate. I would argue I'd go Drummond over Randall on this slate as well. Even with the matchup. So
I'll take
Randall. Would probably reserve him for tournaments. Would you? Okay.
Over Drummond, not over Embiid.
Okay, I see. So in this matchup then, where I'm looking at this too, dollar for dollar, Randall or John Collins? I'm going John Collins.
Here's the problem with John Collins. Every time I play him, he gets in foul trouble in the beginning of the first quarter and plays 26 minutes and is good in 26 minutes,
so
but not
cheap.
As good.
He's just so cheap.
Well, is. But what about Clint Capella, who we have yet to talk about in this podcast? Because when we've done the podcast, he's been out. He's back. He's had huge rebounding games in each of his last three, 16, 11, and 12. He's played 30 minutes the last two games. He's 6,100. Like,
I don't think if I'm going double center, I would 100% probably play Capella. I just, even dollar for dollar, if I'm only locking in one center, I don't think I could stomach Capella over Embiid just because I'm so high on Embiid. I have a feeling because of this last game against Cleveland that Capella is going to be popular at this price. So it definitely makes sense. It's a really, really strong cash game play, really strong tournament play too. There's just already, I mean, we're three games in and we've already talked about like three or four centers that we really like. So it's, you're going to have to make some tough decisions. And for me, Clint Capella will probably fall on the short end of the stick.
That's fair. I think the price tags for both both Collins and Capella are really, really, really intriguing. And we know Collins' upside.
So then, I mean, in that vein, you know, we're looking at the price tag on centers in this game. Mitchell Robinson is only 5,700.
I was just about to ask about Mitchell Robinson because 5,700. Nerlens Noel has not been involved as we thought he might be in the preseason. Robinson continues to start at the five. If he stays out of foul trouble, he's probably going to go for like 35 fantasy points. This is a game where he's going to have to be on the floor a lot with Capella, with Collins in this matchup. It's a good matchup. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mr. Robinson's a guy that can go for 45 fantasy points with a double-double and six blocks. Like, it's easily in his range of outcomes. And like Atlanta's a team, we know a huge part of their game is, you know, Trae Young taking threes and a lot of these guys, you know, spreading the floor and taking threes. But if you look at like Trae Young and the Hawks, like Trae Young has been among the league leaders in drives per game since entering the league. So like this team attacks the basket at a pretty high rate. There's definitely shot blocking upside, similar to how I talked about with Rudy Gobert against San Antonio, a team that drives at the highest rate in the NBA. So he's definitely intriguing. I think RJ Barrett, 6,700. I like that price tag because
so do I.
I mean, there you can't find 10 players in the league with a safer projection for minutes than RJ Barrett and Julius Randle right now. I mean, they're just going to play 37 minutes at least in every competitive game.
It's also hard to find a player at this price range with such secure volume. Like he's taken at least 15 shots in every game. Granted, you know, last game against Indiana was the first time he made more than half of them since his massive opening game. Like he's shot under 28% in three of his five games, but that's something that will normalize. You're shooting this much, especially from beyond the arc. Like he's shooting a lot of threes too. Helps his upside. He's going to contribute in peripherals. He's going to be on the court. So, like, at 6,700, he's a really safe play, especially in this. This is a matchup he should thrive in, too.
Yeah, I like RJ Barrett a lot. I think price included, he might be my favorite player from this team, which is weird because I'm usually not on RJ Barrett. But, like, especially, like, we're on sites where you don't lose points for missed field goals, like, just play him. Like, I played Kelly Oubre a couple nights ago because this is before Draymond came back. It's like, he's going to start hitting eventually. Like, he's not going to go 1-for-98 from three for the season. Like, it just doesn't happen. So, yeah, like, I like a lot of players in this game. We didn't even mention Trae Young yet, who's just awesome. Like,
The thing is, you don't even need to, like, analyze Trae Young. Like, 9,800, Elfrid Payton's not, like, a defender to write home about. He's fine, but it's also Trae Young. Like,
and by the way,
under 10K, you pull the trigger.
Yeah, and this could be a nice game for, like, a lot of these centers. I mean, Atlanta, fifth most points per game allowed off putbacks in the league this season. That's obviously a big part of Robinson's game. He's averaging 3 points per game off putbacks. He has a 39.5% frequency rate off putbacks. It's the highest rate in the league. You know who's second?
Who?
Clint Capella, 34%. So
really? Holy cow.
And Atlanta. Atlanta, by the way, Atlanta, like I said, they're bad against putbacks. Like, this is a really intriguing game.
It is. I mean, there's also, like, we didn't even talk about very quickly before we move on, like, the wings in this game. Like, Gallinari's out. He's going to be reevaluated in a couple weeks. Huerter's questionable right now. So that leaves minutes for DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, and Bogdan Bogdanovic, who are all 5'5 or under. Hunter had a really good game last game. He had over 30 DraftKings points, second time in his last two games.
I think he's such a perfect fit for this team, by the way. He's starting to come on. It's 100%. Like, oh, hey, DeAndre Hunter, if you could just be like the fifth best option for us, that'd be great. And
he can also handle the ball well
for
his size. So I like him a lot. Of those three, very quick, I'd probably rank them Hunter, Bogdanovic, Reddish. But I don't think, like, these are all three plays where, like, we talk about it all the time. If you have 5,500 left for utility, I'm fine with any of them.
Cool. A lot of interesting plays from this game for sure. Oklahoma City at the Miami Heat. No injury news here, I don't think. I mean, Avery Bradley's on the injury report. Doesn't really impact
Jimmy
much
Butler's
for
clear.
Us. Right.
Same like Gabe Vincent's probable, but that doesn't really.
Where do we start from this game? The Thunder are playing pretty hard. I mean, we still don't expect them to be a great team, but this could be a spot where I don't think they could just get blown out. Darius Bazley is playing fantastic for them this year, coming off a huge game, 5,800. Obviously, his team starts with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The matchup isn't incredible, but he's 7,800. The floor is there for him every game. The question decision you'll have to make is if the ceiling is going to be there. I'll start with the Thunder.
So Thunder usually starts and ends with SGA for me. He's just really not looked, I don't want to say not looked good, because he's doing so much. But his efficiency just hasn't been there. And this isn't a Miami defense, especially on a nine-game slate, that I'm going to go out of my way to attack. So I'm fine with SGA in tournaments. I don't think he's in my cash pool like he typically is. But outside of him, like you mentioned Darius Bazley, he is by far the most attractive option in this game to me, or on this team, not in this game. My only concern is, you know, they slide him to the four. It makes me curious as to what lineup Miami will roll out, because we've seen Miami toy around a lot based on how their opponents play. So I could see, do you expect them to slide Bam to the five, Mo Harkless to the four? Do you have to say Bam at the four, Myers Leonard at the five? Like, because I think the starting lineup that Miami rolls out will really determine how high I am on Darius Bazley.
Yeah, I mean, in their last game, they went, Iguodala, Butler, Robinson, Hero, Bam. Like, they can go.
They've gone Bam at the four, Leonard at the five, Myers Leonard at the five. They've gone Harkless at the four, Bam at the five.
Right, they can do a lot of different things, and, like, that's why Bam is so valuable, because, like, you have a small lineup, okay, we can play, you can play Bam at the four and feel fine about it. You can obviously play Bam at the five and feel fine about it. I think they will probably, I wouldn't be surprised if they kept the same starting lineup they had last game. I'm not crazy about the Thunder either. Like, Horford and George Hill aren't going to reach 30 minutes very often with this team, with them rebuilding, obviously. And then it's like, they don't have enough players out of the lineup to really consider the other guys like Hamidou Diallo, or I mean Dort's always kind of fine, but at 5K, like it, his ceiling's not really there.
George Hill at 49 is just fine. Yeah, but he's just never going to get those minutes you really need to have a ceiling game,
right?
Because if he's not hitting his threes, he's not, I don't want to say useless, but in terms of fantasy, he's pretty useless.
Dude, Bam's 8,500 on DraftKings, so we're making progress.
We are making progress, and I'll be honest, it's at a point now where
you got to make decisions. That's the difference. Exactly. You have to make decisions between Bam and other centers now that he's priced where he should be. Whereas when he was 7,400, it's like, oh wow, I'm debating between Bam and Larry Nance and Miles Turner and Christian. Well, Christian Wood's been great, but like players like that. Whereas now you're debating between Bam and Randall and Bam and Vucevic and Bam and Drummond. So,
yep.
I'm never really opposed to him, but I mean Butler is significantly cheaper.
On this slate, where would you rank? I personally, as high as I personally am on Bam, I still take Randall, Drummond, and Embiid over him.
Yeah, he'd Embiid and Randall, probably Drummond too. I mean, any interest in Jimmy Butler, 7,400 coming off his first game back? He played 24 minutes or 27 minutes, didn't do much. I don't know what it is about Jimmy Butler, but since he's been on the Heat, I just haven't played him much. Like, unless guys, like another team playoffs, that has a lot of guys, like Hero's handling the ball more this year. They still have Dragic off the bench. They draw up a lot of plays for Duncan Robinson off screens and stuff. Like, I don't know.
It's just such a cheap, it's like such an appealing price. Like, if he were 79 to 81, I probably wouldn't even consider him. But 7,400 for Jimmy Butler, knowing the peripheral upside he has, even if he has like an inefficient shooting game, is appealing to me. My concern is the minutes. You know, it's his second game back after missing two or three games. I doubt we'll get like finite word on what his minutes will be, just because his injury wasn't like that serious. But if something comes out that he's getting like normal work, like a full workload, I would probably throw him in. If I'm running out 20 lineups, I'd probably put him in 4.
Okay. Anybody else on Miami we haven't talked about? Hero, Duncan Robinson, Dragic.
Looking at this, like this is a good, this to me, as low as people are in OKC this year, this is still a better game from just a basketball fan perspective than fantasy. I mean, the game has a total right now of 213.5. Like, this isn't necessarily one that's going to have a ton of production.
All right, let's move on to Boston and Toronto. No total for this. Toronto opens up as 3-point favorites at home. Not a lot of cheap plays from this game. I mean, Jeff Teague is probably going to sit. He sprained his ankle in Sunday's game against Detroit. Now play again on Monday, like veteran player. I'd be pretty surprised if he played. So maybe we get Peyton Pritchard, who was, impressing a little bit, moving up in the rotation before this injury. Played 28 minutes today or on Sunday. 3,700. I mean, probably comes off the bench with Smart starting. But, I mean, there's obviously, with Kemba also out, plenty of minutes to be had. And then you have your usual suspects for Boston, Tatum and Jaylen Brown. For most of the year, it's been a price discrepancy where Tatum has been about $1,000 more expensive than Brown. But Jaylen's been playing well lately, so it's only a $300 difference on DraftKings where Tatum's 86 and Jaylen Brown's 83.
Yeah, we talked with Bam, we talked about decisions. It's at a point in terms of price now where I'm in that same boat between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Because earlier in this year, there was, like, I think at points, like a $1,400, $1,500 price difference where it was like, okay, Jaylen Brown's production, like his usage rate's like 2% less. He had a much higher assist rate. Like, it just makes sense to go Jaylen Brown dollar for dollar. But we're at a point now where it's a little more difficult. Like, $8,600 is a nice price for Tatum. He's still the alpha in this offense. He's coming off a 60 DraftKings point outing. We also know the upside that Jaylen Brown brings to the table, who has topped 47 in two of his last three games. So I think if I'm playing one of them, this is a type of situation, like a similar situation to what I would do with the Lakers, where if I'm playing Tatum in a line, I want to make them the exact same lineup with Jaylen Brown instead of Tatum. Because it's rare where they both have a ceiling game, so I want to take advantage of one of them. But if there's any Boston play I'm interested in here, it is Peyton Pritchard, just because, like, so far on this slate, elite value that's like $4,400 and less is kind of hard to come by. And with guys we've talked about, that we want to spend up and prioritize, it's going to be important to find at least one of those guys. And if Jeff Teague misses, Peyton Pritchard is going to soak up the majority of the backup point guard minutes. He's going to have, he already takes a lot of shots, but Jeff Teague's a higher usage bench guard. He's only going to get more usage, and Brad Stevens continues to show trust, excuse me, in him. So if the coach is trusting him, I have a hard time not trusting him in DFS if the opportunity is there with Teague out.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with Tatum or Brown. Brown was spotting up a ton last year. He was like the best spot up shooter in the NBA last year. And Toronto gives up. Last year they gave up the most spot up points per game. This year they're bottom three. Toronto and Charlotte have been awful against spot up shooters the last couple years. But Brown's not spotting up as much this year because there's just way more offensive responsibility for him, right? I mean, no Gordon Hayward, Kemba's out.
Yep.
So that's just, we've talked about it. I mean, they're both well over a 30% usage rate. They're both taking like 20 shots a game.
Back to back, do you think Tristan Thompson plays? Last back to back, he sat the second leg of it.
I haven't seen an update that he's, he's been closer to 27 and 26 minutes, which was up from his 22 minutes. So maybe that's a sign that he's trending in the right direction. I'll tell you what, though.
He's only $4,400.
Right. Now, there's what I was getting at. Because on the other side of this game, Chris Boucher, is he starting to become trustworthy? Because Pascal Siakam leads the Toronto Raptors in usage rate this year. Chris Boucher is second. I mean, he has a higher usage rate than Lowry. The same as Fred VanVleet, actually, at 23.8%. But a 30% rebounding rate, 1.39 fantasy points per minute. We know he's insanely efficient. I mean,
he's seen 24 minutes in three of his last four games.
How popular is Chris Boucher if the Raptors lineup comes out tomorrow and he's starting at center?
Cash games, 85% plus. Tournaments, 50% plus. I think that might be conservative, too.
Okay, and now tell me how popular he'll be not counting Steph's lineups.
A quarter of that?
But, like seriously, maybe, like... And,
but the thing is, like... his upside, whether he starts or not, and I think we're 99% certain he won't, is still there. Like, he saw almost starter minutes last game. I like it. I like it a lot. And at his... Like, he's not going to garner a ton of ownership at this price off the bench because people are still kind of accustomed to the fact that, like, he could have a game where, you know, we saw earlier this year... sporadically, like randomly, just a 5 minute showing. I don't think Nick Nurse will do that again.
Well, let's see. Who are the teams he played 5 minutes against? Philadelphia, which I get. Chris Boucher is 6'9". New Orleans, who has Steven Adams and
Steven Adams.
I guess so. He played
minutes against like LMA and Jakob Poeltl. He played meaningful minutes against Julius Randle, Mitch Robin, and Nerlens Noel.
But then he played 29 minutes against.
Yeah. Against Steven Adams
again. Joel Embiid, I get. Like, you're not putting a 6'9 Chris Boucher on Joel Embiid.
Especially a foul pro.
But, like, Daniel Theis, Tristan Thompson, 6'9, 6'10. He's an undersized center.
Yeah. The thing is, like, Daniel Theis, Robert Williams, and Tristan Thompson, none of those three guys are a reason to hold back on Boucher from a matchup perspective at all.
Right, and
so I like it. I like that call a lot.
At 5,100, like, I think you should have some tournament interest. And yeah, like, Robert Williams is 6'8". Like, they don't.
Yeah,
this is a spot where Boucher could play 26 to 28 minutes, and with him averaging 1.4 fantasy points per minute, with him averaging again in the limited minutes, 4.5 points per game as the role man. We know Kyle Lowry runs a ton of pick and roll. And Boston's allowing the 6 most points per possession to the role man. I think it's a really good tournament spot for Chris Boucher. I kind of hope he doesn't start. Who else from Toronto that stands out? VanVleet, 7,700.
Yeah. Yep, this price range, I talk about it almost every time he's on the slate. This is the price range I target him in. He rounded into form, 47-plus drafting points in 3 of the last 4, shooting a ton from beyond the arc. He's had average 21.5 shots per game, or excuse me, 21 shots per game. Over his last two games. And Nick, when is this guy, when's the last time? Okay, I guess I just looked at his game log. So the last time was December 23rd. But that's the first time I've seen him below 35 minutes in probably a year. Like, this guy just runs into the ground. And Kyle Lowry is the same way, but you're getting an incremental discount on someone who, as of now and as of last year, is a higher offensive priority than Kyle Lowry. So I like Fred VanVleet a lot, especially if we know Marcus Smart is going to potentially be on Kyle Lowry.
Any Siakam, 7,700?
So I'm a little butthurt with Siakam because I played him against New Orleans and he really disappointed. That was the game after he got benched for disciplinary reasons.
Oh yeah,
I get it. He's cheap. He warrants consideration, but honestly, dollar for dollar, I'd rather go Boucher for $2,600 less.
That's fair. I can't say I disagree. All right, Dallas at Houston. We don't have a total or spread here. James Harden, questionable for Houston. Luka Doncic didn't play Sunday. Still questionable for this game, but no. If he played Sunday, I would say, okay, maybe he sits Monday. But since he sat Sunday, I think there's a better chance he plays Monday. Harden, yep. We'll see as well. Questionable with an ankle. I mean, if both sit, I mean, you have the two just most ball-dominant players in basketball, arguably, out, so that'll obviously change things. But I mean, Dallas should be easier because we saw an obvious sample tonight with Luka out. Talk about Dallas if Luka's out and what we saw on Sunday night.
Yeah, so going into the Sunday game, I transparently was completely wrong about where the usage would go. I thought we were going to see what we saw last year and saw a massive bump for Trey Burke. You know, last year Trey Burke's usage rate was about 20%. It shot up to 27-28% when Luka was out. That was not the case tonight. Like, this was Jalen Brunson's team from start to finish. I'm pretty sure Trey Burke, I don't think he finished with more than 21 minutes tonight. I would have to pull up the box score to confirm that, but Jalen Brunson had like 27 points, 8 or 9 assists. Like, he had a really, really solid game, and the offense flowed through him. Josh Richardson was fine. Dorian Finney-Smith was fine. But these guys still, like, you look at the slate, and a lot of it, because the slate was published right when this one locked, and the Luka confirmation of it, like when the slate locked tonight, Luka was doubtful. He wasn't ruled out. The news came out right around lock. So Brunson still 3,300, Trey Burke 3,400, Josh Richardson 5,300, DFS 4,400. And then you can get into like James Johnson had some good run for 3,700, Kleber 3,900. Like, these guys are all still really cheap, where if in the off chance Luka's out, I think you just go right back to two or three pieces from Dallas, especially with this matchup. If he's in, I think he's Luka's a phenomenal target at 10-3 if he's in.
Also, don't sleep on Maxi Kleber. He's playing
close to
starters minutes. He's well. Still under 4K. Like,
yeah, I agree.
He's not sexy, but especially on DraftKings where he's under 4K, he gives you a 3-point bonus. He's a guy that takes a lot of threes. I definitely don't hate him regardless. He'd probably be somebody that you prefer Luka to have in the lineup because he can get a lot of open looks alongside Luka Doncic. So definitely don't sleep on him at all. And I'm pretty sure he was in David's lineup on FanDuel. He was. Alongside Jalen Brunson. So definitely don't sleep on Maxi Kleber. For Houston, we saw them without Harden their last game, and John Wall, just massive usage, right? 102 touches in that game against Sacramento. 9.8 minutes of possession, just a massive number. So if Harden's out again, like, John Wall at 7,600, he's played 37 minutes in back-to-back games, so conditioning's fine. He's looked pretty good for the most part. I'd say he's looked really good for the most part. If James Harden's out, this price is too cheap.
Oh, 100%.
By maybe $1,400
I would literally say, I was going to say almost $2,000.
Right. Like, I was definitely being, you know, generous.
Conservative, yeah. What we saw the other day, or not even just the other day, like, yeah, when Harden was out the other day, but the game before when Harden was in, like, he's taking, I'll be honest, I thought I was high on John Wall going to Houston. I wasn't sure if he'd be able to fill in offensively like Westbrook did when Harden was out, and he did it, but much more efficiently than we saw Westbrook ever do it. So he is literally a discounted Russell Westbrook if Harden's out. So I absolutely love him. I think he will be probably the chalkiest player on the slate if Harden doesn't play. But I also think he's a strong play if Harden plays. Like, am I wrong in saying I think he's still a top tier play if Harden's in?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will just go under the assumption that, oh, Harden's in, I can't play John Wall, but he's 7,600.
He's cheap enough where you can play him. That's the thing. Like, if he was 8,600, 9K, and Harden is in.
And here's the thing. John Wall is like 85% of the usage and involvement as Westbrook was last year,
mm-hmm.
he's still too cheap. And I know they have Christian Wood, who we'll talk about, who's more involved than anyone they had in their front court last year after Capella got traded. Like, they were just, okay, Robert Covington, you know, you're playing center for us and power forward half the time, and P.J. Tucker's playing center for us and power forward half the time. They have a legitimate guy that you can run pick and rolls with Christian Wood. But still, like, if Harden's out, John Wall is one of the best plays of the slate. If Harden's in, John Wall is still a really solid play. I do want to talk about Christian Wood, though, because DeMarcus Cousins' return hasn't really done anything, right? Wood continues to start. Cousins has played 25 total minutes in two games, where Christian Wood's started both games, and he's played 32 and 33 minutes, continuing to smash. He's averaging 24 and 11. He's been unstoppable in the pick and roll, and it doesn't matter. Like, if Harden's in, great. But if he's not, like, they're still going to run the pick and roll with John Wall with him. And he's averaging 4.8 points per game as the roll man. Only Horford, Gobert, Mike Muscala, interestingly enough, and Bam and Vucevic averaging more, but we know Wood's just better than most of those players in the play type or off the play type. Dallas is allowing the fourth most points per game to the role man at 9.8 per game, and the second most points per possession. So I don't see how Dorian Finney-Smith can cover him. I don't see how Maxi Kleber can cover him or Dwight Powell. So I like Christian Wood a lot in this game.
I think he's too cheap. You really don't have to dive into anything more than, like, look at what he is averaging per game right now. There is no reason someone averaging 25 and 11 should be $7,400 on DraftKings. Like, you hypothetically say he has, by his current 2021 standards, if he has an average game, 24 plus, you know, your 1.2 per rebound plus two assists, that's three extra points. He's also getting almost 2.5 blocks per game. You're already looking at almost like 6x value.
Yeah.
Strictly if you go off his season averages, which we've seen him smash left and right. So, like, whether Harden's in or not, I think he's, like, center is loaded on this slate, and he's just another piece to add to that puzzle.
Real quick before we get out of this game, any Eric Gordon if Harden is ruled out?
I think so. I mean, 5,700 for the role we know he'll have. He shot 18 times with Harden in the last game.
You remember last year how many games in a row Eric Gordon just had like 32 fantasy points down the stretch?
Yeah, wasn't it?
It was just like...
In the bubble, there was like six in a row or something like that where he was like, oh, you want 30-plus fantasy points? Play Eric Gordon.
Right.
Like, that's literally all it was. And it didn't matter if Harden was in or out because Harden played most of the bubble. He just did what he needed to do. And his price never moved above like 5,800.
Because the algorithm was like, oh, he's not doing anything. He's not exceeding his... He's not exceeding his price tag or his previous game. So it's like, all right, we're just going to keep more of that, which...
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. That was hilarious. That's like Alvin Kamara, 81 receptions every year.
Right.
I mean, the volume will be there, and it's going to be hard. You'll be hard-pressed to find someone that can shoot upwards or more than 20 times in a game at his price if Harden's out. So I like it, yeah. I think he's a good cash play.
All right, three games left. Detroit at your Milwaukee Bucks. Do they have a shot to keep this game close? We will see. Milwaukee opens as 13.5 point favorites. 227.5 is the total. Another one of those slates where, I mean, Giannis has smashed the last two games, 68 and 65 fantasy points, 10-8 on DraftKings. I mean, look, he just went for 65 fantasy points in 28 minutes. So
that is literally almost 3 fantasy points a minute. Not 3, it's like 2.5 roughly per minute, but that is insane.
So, like, even if you're worried about blowout concern,
less than 50% from the field,
even if you're worried about blowout concern, Giannis is arguably the most efficient fantasy point per minute guy in fantasy and in the NBA. So 28 minutes of Giannis is better than 35 minutes of most players in the league. So it's hard for me to ever just say, yep, Giannis isn't in consideration for me. Nobody in Detroit's going to slow him down. I mean, Milwaukee is just you can play Giannis if you want. Middleton's at 7,700. I think he's safe at that price. But if I'm, it's kind of easy, right? Like, the Milwaukee guys are in play because it's a good matchup. They're a good team. And if you play the Milwaukee guys, you want to run it back with somebody from Detroit. The question is, who is that?
I know. I'm looking at Detroit right now, and I understand why Jeremy Grant is 6,900. I'm not comfortable playing Jeremy Grant.
You couldn't ask for a worse individual matchup for a player like Jeremy Grant than Giannis.
Like, he's not going to get any open shots. He's not going to be able to create against Giannis. There's a high likelihood he could find himself in foul trouble. Like, it's just a play I'm going to fade, and I'm not going to even second guess and think twice about it. If I'm looking at New York, or not New York, excuse me, Detroit, like, Josh Jackson right now is questionable. He did leave the game on Sunday with an ankle injury. So if he sits, that does help Derrick Rose's usage rate off the bench, even though, but at the same time, Jackson has seen himself in the starting lineup a couple times lately. So I wouldn't hate Derrick Rose at 5,800. Sadiq Bey would pick up a couple extra minutes, and he's been seeing 20 plus in three of the last four, 30 plus in two of those. So he's a fine flyer. But like, if I'm targeting anyone from this game, it's probably going to be like a one-off from Milwaukee. And strictly based on Vegas data, like, that one-off would be Bobby Portis. If you look at Bobby Portis's game log, he's played 25 plus minutes in four games. In all four of those games, the Bucks have won by at least 20. And in all four of those games, he's posted at least 25 DraftKings points, with three of those four posting at least 32. He's on the court every game, but his ceiling games are strictly tied to blowouts and game script. So if you are scripting this game, if you expect the Bucks to not only cover, but just really take off in this game, and you're fading Giannis, it makes complete sense to play Bobby Portis.
Yeah, I had a feeling you might go there, and I totally get it. I'm with you. Like, I'm not really interested on anybody from the Pistons. And if I'm playing Milwaukee, it's like, play Giannis because he's got a massive ceiling and he only needs 28 minutes to go for 65. You don't necessarily have to run it back unless you're playing multiple players from this game. That's really it for me. Anything else? Detroit is
just, no, that's it.
Bleh. All right.
I just never thought, I didn't think this early in the season I'd see Jeremy Grant more expensive than Drew Holiday.
Yeah, Holiday's kind of lived in that like 6-7 to 7K range so far this season. Pacers at Pelicans up next. No injury news other than the fact that we got word a couple days ago that TJ Warren's out indefinitely with that foot. So That'll open up some minutes. You know, Doug McDermott, Justin Holiday, they'll get more run. We haven't really talked about the Pacers with TJ Warren out yet, so I guess let's start there.
Yeah. So TJ Warren out obviously gives a bump to the usual suspects, Domantas Sabonis, Victor Oladipo, Malcolm Brogdon, and then you'll see last game it was Aaron Holiday in the starting lineup, but last year when Warren was out, we saw mixtures of Aaron Holiday, we saw Justin Holiday, we saw Doug McDermott. My guess is they just run it back with Aaron Holiday. I don't know if it was the matchup against the Knicks last game, but with Warren out, like, Malcolm Brogdon was doing literally whatever he wanted to and getting whatever he wanted to. And in a game where New Orleans defense is, I don't want to say it's awful, but like, they're fifth in defensive efficiency right now, but I definitely think they're overperforming. They're going to be better than last year, but they're not going to be as good as they are right now. And their pace, I also think, will normalize a bit, where this year right now they're 27th in pace, where last year I believe they were a top five team in pace. So they're in this weird influx space where I expect things to normalize a bit. And I still think this is an exploitable matchup for Malcolm Brogdon. And whenever I play Malcolm Brogdon, I have interest in him. I mean, even when I don't. But I love pairing him with Domantas Sabonis. I think they correlate really well. And Sabonis, like, similar to Randall, has just been stellar this year. So he's another power forward center player that I have a ton of interest in on this slate. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers, for the first time since I've done the podcast where they've been on a slate, they're finally priced up. Like, Brogdon was always in the low sevens, and Sabonis was in the mid eights for a lot of the beginning of the season. And now Sabonis is 9.5, and Brogdon's pushing 8K. But, I mean, with TJ Warren out,
Victor Oladipo at 7K, because his price is the only one that's actually come down. And aside from a pretty inefficient game against the Knicks, he's been pretty consistent this year.
Yeah, and like Warren's out. Jeremy Lamb's not coming back. So it's like their backcourt and their wings take a hit, which should solidify the minutes for Oladipo. I think you can take a shot on Holiday at 3,500. He's not going to have a high usage rate, but at 3,500, I know he didn't do anything last game, but he won't have to do much. And then, yeah, I mean, Sabonis is second in the NBA in touches per game. He's been super involved. Malcolm Brogdon isn't too far behind. He's averaging 86 touches per game, which is more than Luka, more than Trae Young, more than SGA, more than Donovan Mitchell, more than Damian Lillard. So he's touching the ball a ton. Like you said, yeah, like if they're touching the ball that much, then I don't know how many times I've been not able to watch the Pacers game, and I just followed on Stat Tracker, and I see Malcolm Brogdon 3-point field goal assisted by Sabonis or vice versa, all the time. So yeah. I have no problem with those guys. Same with Oladipo. Same with Holiday. Probably not going to Miles Turner just because I never play Miles Turner when Sabonis is active unless he's like 5,200 or something. And right now he's 6,400. Pelicans.
I'm still high on this team in general. I think they have a lot. Like the ceiling is massive. But we're starting to see a lot of the inconsistency that you see with, you know, a young team. Zion, after posting 40-plus DraftKings points in two of his first three games, only topped 30 once in the last three games. He's only played above 30 minutes in one game in the last three. And then next to him, Brandon Ingram has been dominating the usage rate, still leads the team in usage. He did get, I think it was the Thunder game he got ejected in. For a ticky-tack flagrant two, in my opinion. But if you're game log chasing, ignore that 26 minutes. He was on pace for about 50 DraftKings points. He's been the more consistent asset, and if I'm picking between the two, I think I'd be okay with the $500 difference and going up to Ingram. I think Zion will carry higher ownership, though, just the namesake, cheaper price. But I don't think, you know, every time they've been on the slate this year, I'm pretty sure I played one of them. This is a slate where I don't know if I'm going to feel the need to force one of them in.
Totally agree.
It's not a good matchup. It's a pace down spot, a pretty stout defense, and they're going to have their Zion is going to have his hands full with Domantas Sabonis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't trust that Zion is going to Zion's really good, but he's not a guy that's always going to give you 8 to 12 rebounds because Steven Adams is still there and Lonzo gets rebounds. And then he's not getting any assists at all. He's averaging one assist per game, which, okay, you don't really care if Zion's getting assists, but in fantasy, I can play guys at his price that can do everything. And Zion,
he's
not blocking a ton of shots. He's not getting any steals. The defensive stats, I think, are going to be there soon, but they're not right now. And then,
so what about that? What about Siakam versus Zion? $200 apart.
In a vacuum, Zion is a higher ceiling, but in this slate on this spot, I think I want Siakam.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And then Bledsoe finally had a good game, but I don't want to trust Bledsoe.
I can't get roped back in. I will, he's what, 6,300 on DraftKings? I will say,
yeah,
he's only 5,100 on FanDuel, so I think there is merit there.
Sure.
We know the downside, but I think he's a fine tournament play at that price.
All right, let's go to the last game of the slate. Sacramento at Golden State, 232 total. Kings favored by 2.5. Steph Curry went for 62 real points on Sunday night. Potential sit spot for him, but I don't think he wants to sit. Maybe Draymond Green, who's obviously still being eased in from his injury, played 28 minutes on Sunday night. They expect him to play around 24 minutes, so he played a couple more minutes in that game. Didn't really do much. Maybe he sits. I mean, if Curry plays, he's still just 9,300.
Yeah, that's super cheap. He's in that price range. Him along with Kevin Durant, they've both been, and Kyrie, I guess, are in this boat, just been way too cheap this year. And they're at that low 9K price range where you can comfortably fit them next to someone on this slate, hypothetically like Luka at 10-3 if he goes. You can play double point guard and fit Luka and Steph comfortably with one value play, and then balance out the rest of your lineup, and that gives you a really solid floor in cash. I think if he plays, and I fully expect him to play, I also don't see them limiting his minutes. Like, I still see him playing 32 minutes at a minimum, especially against a team like Sacramento, when this is a game they can win. And I believe, are they favored, I believe? Or no, Sacramento's 2.5-point favorite. So it's expected to be a tight game, 232.5 total. I think that total implies that Vegas thinks Steph will play too because he pushes the pace.
Yeah.
So I'm all aboard Steph once again.
Yeah, the question is, like, do we play anybody else from this team? I don't hate Kelly Oubre at 5,500 if Draymond's out, because he should play more time at the four and should just get more rebounding chances. He's going to play 32 to 35 minutes. And again, like, I still think in a game environment like this, and especially if Draymond's out, where we've seen Oubre get, you know, 11, 8, 7 rebounds this year, if he has an outlier, not even an outlier, just an average shooting game. You know, most of the games he's had have been outlier shooting. If he falls into a, you know, 4-for-9 from three game and, you know, scores elsewhere with dunks and stuff like that and gets the rebounds, he could go for 45. And this is the game environment to chase that. I mean, James Wiseman continues to start, but the minutes have been absolutely lacking, so it's hard to go there at 5K. Like, just give me Tristan Thompson. Like, give me Chris Boucher 707 times out of 707. I don't know why that number came to my mind, but whatever. anybody else on Golden State?
No, I just think, like, as painfully bad as Uber has been, $5,500 is pretty cheap for the body of work we've seen. So I like that call.
Does Pascal start if Draymond's out, or they go to Toscano Anderson?
It's Ben Toscano.
I mean, if Toscano starts, I'm still not playing him. If Pascal starts, you can make the case because Pascal actually does things.
Yeah, it's just like it's going to be for me, you know, if Pascal starts, like, it just depends if I need to go there or not. Like, if he frees up room for what I want to do, sure. And if he hypothetically starts and you want a game stack, I think he fits well if you play him, Curry, and run it back with, like, a Rashawn Holmes and or, like, a De'Aaron Fox. I think that would work. Like, that's a game stack that I like.
Yep. If you're game stacking, which I am, I love De'Aaron Fox here. 8,200, he's priced up a bit, and people might be worried about that. This is a game tailor-made for him. Golden State, fifth most points per game allowed in transition in the NBA at 26 per game. Fifth highest field points per possession off transition. De'Aaron Fox is averaging 6.2 transition points per game. That is a top 10 number in the league and a near 26% frequency rate in transition. I love this spot for him. Buddy Hield, like, we know he has the ceiling. He's 6,800. Just not, like, going for a – has he gone for 40 yet? I don't think he has. No, he hasn't.
I don't think he has. He's a – for me, I think I played him once on DraftKings this year. I've played him just about every time the Kings are on the slate on FanDuel. Like, he's 5,700 on FanDuel. Last slate against Houston, I believe it was 5,200. Like, he's just too cheap there. Like, his bad games are going to be around 25 fantasy points, and that's – at his price on FanDuel, it's about 5x. So when your floor is at 5x with the ceiling for 8x, like, you lock that in. I just don't know if I'll get there at 6.8 on DraftKings. The other king that, you know, I'm sure you want to talk about, Marvin Bagley. He's already just broken my heart too many times this year where I don't know if I can do it. Yeah. Rashawn Holmes, though, has been really good.
Yeah, I like
Holmes. And he's still only 5,600. But the problem is he lost his power forward eligibility. So he now, like, do you prioritize him over spending up at center? And if not, I would probably still prioritize Clint Capella for $500 more. I think I'd prioritize Rashawn Holmes over Mitchell Robinson.
Right. The problem with this whole situation is that Holmes is a strong play. He's too cheap, in my opinion. But
I agree.
Center's loaded, and he's only center eligible, like you said. That hurts. That really does hurt, especially on a slate where center's always loaded. But it's not even just that. Like, there are some good mid-range or cheap centers we talked about, like Clint Capela, like Mitchell Robinson, like Chris Boucher.
Chris Boucher, exactly.
Like,
I would even say Miles Turner at $6,400 is a fine play. We didn't really touch on that much. But
right, so that makes it tough. But in a vacuum, like, he's too cheap. It's a good spot for him. And he's finally solidified. A couple games ago, it was, you know, 26 minutes from Bagley, 26 from – or 28 from Holmes. Bielitz will play 16. Whiteside will play 14. And now the last couple, it's been over 30 minutes each game for Rashawn Holmes. So he's clearly established himself as the guy. I still firmly believe that Marvin Bagley's going to win somebody a tournament at some point this year, but it hasn't been great. But I mean, you still have to love the usage, but I don't know if you have to go there on this slate. Anybody Agreed. Else on Sacramento? They're obviously without Tyrese Haliburton for a couple games, but that doesn't really do much for the rest of this backcourt.
No, not really. I think we hit on the few that I'm interested in. Harrison Barnes is always somewhat interesting because he does have that. It is a revenge game, yeah, but he also has that 40-point ceiling, which he's showcased this year. So, I mean, he's another guy. Like, you have one spot left in your lineup, I'm fine going there. Right. But it's not someone we go out of my way to get.
All right, man. Talk about the content that we have at FTN on Monday. I handled, first of all, I appreciate you filling in Saturday.
Yeah, of course.
And I took Sunday's article, so back to you on Monday. If anybody's new, Joe and I will be alternating the game-by-game article and the NBA 5 Stats to Know article every week, or every day during the week. And that's not just Monday through Friday. That's Monday through Sunday.
Yep. So I will be doing the game-by-game and the 5 Stats. I'm working on the game-by-game after the podcast, so that'll be up first thing in the morning. I'll get the 5 Stats out by lunchtime. Content's been obviously bang shot article. Strongly recommend you reading it if it produced $200,000 in the last 7 days.
That's so absurd. I
know it's absurd, but there's the NBA primetime stream every day before Eddie and Kawhi Eisenberg usually take over about an hour to 90 minutes before the slate. Kyle Murray's model has been on fire. So keep chugging along. It's been a good 2021 so far for the FTN team. Before we head out, though, we have not talked Bills whatsoever today. Is there anything? The floor is yours, Adam.
We don't have to. You know, the best team in the NFL stayed good today. So, also, I am very happy that I'm very happy that Buffalo ended up having to play the Colts instead of Tennessee, because Buffalo would have.
Oh, I would too.
Buffalo would have torn up Tennessee's defense, but I would rather face the Colts because I think Buffalo will only have to score like 25, 26 points, whereas against Tennessee, they probably would have to score like 33 or so, which they can do. Yeah. But, dude, I'm trying not to get too excited, but I looked at the bracket, and it's like, okay, if they beat the Colts, which they should, they get to play the winner of Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and it's like,
Pittsburgh's really – I think Pittsburgh's overrated. Everybody thinks that.
So, like, I'm not worried. Then if they win that game, all of a sudden they're in the AFC Championship game. It's crazy. Crazy time.
Which is as far as they'll go, but yeah, I understand. I told Rob Gardner when I was talking earlier today, I think the Super Bowl winner is coming out of the AFC. After the Packers lost back to Bakhtiari, I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. By the way,
go ahead.
Do not appreciate Aaron Rodgers continuing to ball out, because I was like, oh, maybe Josh Allen can sneak MVP into the MVP. Says, but yeah, it's Rodgers. But I do think Josh Allen is second now.
Agreed. And then there was obviously the football team Giants game the Eagles game where the Giants fans are crying about the Eagles playing Nate Sudafeld, which I thought was hilarious.
I mean, did
like they wanted to lose. Like, that's in my opinion, that's my take on it. Like,
no, that's locked that, up that's 100% fact. And Giants fans think the Eagles did it to mess with the Giants. Like, they don't care about you. They're trying to get a better draft.
The Giants won six games. You want to make the playoffs, win more.
That's
literally
that's very fair. They lost a lot of close games too, but
they did.
Anyway, football season. Appreciate everybody for the regular season, for DFS wise, season long wise. D-Bro and I's podcast, the Fade the Chalk podcast, was a huge success in year one. All the content at FTN Fantasy and FTN Daily for the NFL season was great. But we're going to have playoff content for DFS and a ton of it. So make sure checking that out, as well as all the NBA content. Every sport, we are helping you crush in daily and season-long fantasy and betting all at FTN. Best of luck on Monday's slate. Get off to a great start to your week. We'll be back on Tuesday. Till then, peace out.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.